Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, I need you to put me in your house for the second half of that Lakers game.
It was more like a quiet, stewing annoyance than, like, I knew they were going to win the game. It was just like, I was so ready to be like, Anthony, we got our 30 or 40 point blowout from wire to wire that we've been asking for. We were that close to it, and alas.
I likened it. So when I was in college, I just kind of messing around a ton. And I remember one conversation I had with my dad when I was a business major. There was this corporation that I was going to work for, and it was pretty clearly a pyramid scheme. And I remember, like, talking to my dad and explaining him what this company was. It was like this life insurance thing. And I was telling him, like, well, you know, I start at the very bottom, and then I have somebody above me, and I do all my sales or whatever. And yeah, they get a portion of the commission from me. But then, you know, the more I do it and the more I bring people into it, I can take over their commissions and then take portions of their commissions. And then as my higher ups kind of retire or whatever, I can assume their positions. And as I'm talking to him, I remember my dad just, like, looking at me just with this look of sheer and utter contempt at me being such an idiot. That's how I picture you watching the second half of last night's game.
Like, just that level of contempt.
Worse and worse.
It was, it probably wasn't. I don't have the energy for that crap on January 1st, man. Like, I've got plenty of rage and frustration, and, like, they're 27-7, and we're just trying to get through this part of the season in a lot of ways and just get the W. That's not to say that I'm, like, always all hunky-dory about it, but I think, like, you know, part of the reasons why they can't do that is structural on the team. We were talking before we hit record here on that. So I think, you know, part of it is effort level. Also, like, it's hard to get back up when you think the game is over. It's like, oh, crap, it's a 7-point game. Like, we've got to play hard all of a sudden. That's just not really how it works. But, I was very irritated. I'm just really trying to not let games like this, especially, like, it's got to be against Milwaukee or Clippers or a high-end team to really piss me off. But that was about as irritating as a 10 or 11 point win can be against a bad team.
The line on that game was minus 11.
Yeah, go figure it.
So today's show, we're going to talk a little bit about the game and kind of relate some bigger picture stuff from the game. And then we got to talk about Darren Collison. And then finally, to wrap up the show here at the very end, Pete has some thoughts about David Stern that he wanted to share as well. So plenty of stuff to get to. I started my morning, I didn't want to write about it right after the game because that game did, like, I was as annoyed by that game as I've been about a game in quite some time.
Really?
Yeah, I walked away from that pretty pissed off. And I was going to write about it last night, but I said, you know what? I'm my own boss now. I'm going to wait till morning and see, you know, let the emotions kind of cool down a little bit. So I wrote about it this morning. And I think my main takeaway from it was that the Lakers carry themselves as this team that has made, as a group, multiple title runs, multiple finals runs, maybe even won a championship here and there. And by the way, if you want to read that or listen to it, it's on patreon.com/AnthonyIrwinLA. But I wrote that, and my takeaway from it was that that's a great way to develop bad habits or stop yourself from developing the kinds of habits that allow for those long postseason runs. This year, you know, the goal this year is not 60 wins. It's not 65 wins. It's not any number of regular season wins. It's championship, right? It's getting to the championship. It's beating Milwaukee. It's beating Philadelphia, whoever it is that the Lakers face off against there. And I don't think some of the habits that it's not necessarily that they're building, although some of the habits there are kind of annoying, but the habits that they're stopping themselves from building are the kinds of things that make me a little nervous. And I thought last night pretty well epitomized that concern of mine. Do you kind of understand the point that I'm kind of making there?
No, absolutely. Like we talked about this a little bit on the pod, and that they play, like you said, like a team that's already won, right? Like mm-hmm. a team that's in the second year, like Golden State would have these types of games, yeah. right? Or the early 2000 Lakers would have these types of games where really the regular season was a long preseason for them, mm-hmm. but they knew that they already had what it took to win a title. And of course you need luck and you need certain things to work out, but they knew that like they had already hit their top gear of yeah. what they are. I don't think this Lakers team, this group has hit their top gear.
Yes, at that's a great way to put it. Yeah.
And now obviously we want them hitting their top gear in the playoffs, mm-hmm. but
it'd be nice to see it.
It'd be nice to see, like, you know, flash it here. And they do
yeah.
for a quarter, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't expect them to win 2-3 quarters in a game against anybody 43-17
yeah.
the way that they did. But it's just a matter of like, can you sustain that? And the other element of it that's even more concerning to me is they don't like getting punched back.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, I saw you making this point on Twitter.
Yeah, they have a hard time handling like when a team like steps to them, kind of like the schoolyard bully, like the old idea that, you know, you punch the schoolyard bully and
yeah.
he doesn't handle that particularly well, right?
Because they've never been punched before.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And so the Lakers very much play like that, and it takes them a long time to get back on track. That's another thing. Like there's going to be some important playoff game where the other team goes on a 10-0 run. Mm-hmm. Like, are we just like rattled? Is that going to be a 15-0 run in a couple of possessions, or can they get it back under control? I trust LeBron. LeBron mm-hmm. has gone through it, but I don't think I trust anybody else to help be a run stopper, including Anthony Davis, to yeah. be quite frank. And that is, you know, maybe we don't need anybody other than LeBron. LeBron's going to hit some pull-up three in the playoffs, and that 7-0 run is now 7-3, right? And that's not yeah. so bad. I don't have that trust in anybody else yet. And I just think they're too casual with these types of situations.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily fair to not trust AD, because I still don't think the roster is optimized for AD.
I agree.
I think that needs to be taken into account whenever we talk about this stuff. But yeah, I thought that one of the things that really has stood out to me so far this year is that, like, Jared Dudley accused the Clippers of this when he was there, is that mm-hmm. they're a great front-running team, that they look really, really good when they're up ahead, right? But when it's an evenly played or a closer game that they would like, you kind of start to see the Lakers fall into their shell a little bit. And I would kind of like to see, and this is, again, this is the kind of thing that you develop over the course of a season. This isn't something I'm necessarily worried about right now. It's just a habit that I would like to see them break right now in January, so it doesn't come back up in May. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I thought last night, the point that you made about it being really difficult to get your intensity level back up once you've kind of checked out for the game, mm-hmm. that's an altogether fair caveat here. But I would like to have seen the Lakers take care of business a little more, because even still, like, there were some nervous moments. You always felt like they were going to win, but I think they got to within six. And you never really felt like the Lakers kind of put their foot on the Suns' throat to finish the game. It was like Phoenix missed shots, and then they mm-hmm. that counted for the Lakers' stops to get them over the hump.
That's right. My favorite game of this season, I think, is their win in Miami, because they battled. Kind of what you're talking about is mm-hmm. that's basically the essence of it, right? Is like yeah. you are in a battle. You hit them, but they hit you back,
right.
and it hurts when they mm-hmm. hit you, right? Now what? And,
right.
And you persevered through that. And they did that in the Miami game, and they kept coming, they kept fighting, and they won. Mm-hmm. There need to be more games like yeah. that. You're not going to get that against a Phoenix Suns. You need that from across the way on the other side of the court. You need yeah. that team to bring that intensity. But I would like to see them, when they do find themselves in moments of battling more often.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we're going to get to a little bit more of the structural reasons why last night happened, and my concern being that, can the Lakers actually completely blow out an opponent, given how bad the next creator coming off of the bench would be. And then that's going to segue perfectly into the Darren Collison conversation. So hang tight. We'll be back to that here in a second. It was funny, you mentioned the times that you punch a bully in the face and then they kind of back down because they aren't used to being hit in the face. Mm-hmm. Remember one time I punched a bully in the face and they were used to being punched in the face?
It didn't work out for you.
It did not work out. I just got hit in the face way harder than I hit the other dude in the face. That didn't work out.
There's value in fighting back. There's always value in fighting. And the next time, I mean, let me ask you this. What happened with that bully going forward? Maybe he punched you in the face that time, but what happened after that?
He continued to bully. He had problems. Yeah. He eventually wound up in jail. I think he got murdered in jail. So he just had problems.
Okay. Well, yeah. If they're, you know.
Yeah.
There goes my point. Thanks, Anthony.
No, but I think the point that you're making is like the hope is that like even if you get punched in the face or you fight or whatever, you walk away or the bully walks away with that with like an amount of respect for you, mm-hmm. right? That's the hope there. But I think this person was incapable of that.
Yeah, it sounds like they're deeper issues. Yes.
I was really sad though because I was remember those old Adidas jackets, like the puffy Adidas jackets with it wasn't. Adidas sign. I think Adidas sign right now is really lame. I really liked the flower that it used to be. Mm-hmm. And the big puffy Adidas jacket that I had, it was black. It had the white stripes down the back. It had the flower in the back or down the arms. It had the flower in the back. I love this thing. And I bled all over it because that dude broke my nose. All right. I guess we should talk about the structural reasons. So we got to some of the kind of psychological, intangible reasons why last night happened and why I think what we're going to talk about now is going to explain why that might continue to happen in a more tangible way, in a more definable way. Mm-hmm. And I think it all starts with the fact that when LeBron gets subbed out, the person you now have in charge of the offense is Rajon Rondo.
Sure. And Anthony Davis, right? And yeah. Davis has – like he saw – Ricky Rubio was laying, bleeding, and dying on the court, and Avery Bradley was open for like 3 seconds in that fourth quarter, and AD didn't see him, right? So Rondo is in charge of running the offense, but so is like your go-to scorer, best player type of guy, and AD's really deficient as a passer, and at least with his back to the basket. He's okay when he drives and kicks. He can do that, but his back to the – he just does not turn and survey. Like he has a really hard time making it. So the combination of that – I mean, Lord knows we've beat the Rondo dead horse to death, but I think other people are starting to see it too. Mm-hmm. I heard Sam Mitchell on NBA TV today talking about how like Rondo you need a guy who can score out of a pick and roll. I'm like, thank you, a national guy, a basketball guy, and he was talking about Rondo specifically that he can't do it, and I was like, holy crap, maybe we're having a breakthrough.
We're turning a corner.
Yeah.
That won't stop any of the randos in our mentions. But I want to talk about the AD thing because I don't think this has been covered necessarily enough. And I'll take blame for this as well, some accountability for this. It's really easy to beat the Rondo horse because it's so obvious.
Right.
But, you know, you and I were sitting there watching the game against the Blazers at on last Friday or whenever it was. Mm-hmm. And while that was – I think that was Saturday. Yes, last Saturday. And – I think Davis was double teamed and he proceeded to dribble backwards, kind of did a pirouette to try to skip past the ball out and threw the ball like four rows deep into the Portland night. And I would say, I don't even know if at this stage of his career, do you think that's something he can even improve on? Like if he didn't get it by now, because he's been double teamed so often, if he doesn't have it by now, I don't know if that's something that he's necessarily going to improve on.
I mean, I'm not ready to like give up on that idea. I have no idea the types of efforts that have been made to improve him at that and the efforts that he's made as well. He certainly needs guidance on this. It's something like he's really smart as a defender, like along with being freakishly talented, he just has an understanding and just like an IQ that's like, that's all this is being like, oh, do this instead of that. Or if you see, it's a lot of if then type stuff from a basketball perspective. If the help comes from here, this guy is in charge of defending two guys. He's already got he's got great size, so he can make a lot of those over the top passes and skip passes that like, there's nothing physically that limits him from being able to do that. He gets turned around from the basket too often in that, like when he posts up, you're supposed to like survey, right? So that means kind of peeking over your shoulder and seeing, you know, there are too many times where he's just looking directly away. That's why he didn't see Avery Bradley, right? Like literally Rubio's rolling around on the floor and Avery Bradley's like, hey, I'm right here, and nobody's around him. And he didn't see it.
Yeah.
And so like, that would be the first thing I'd look for, is rather than having your back completely to the rim, you choose a pivot foot slightly. And turn your shoulders slightly. And now you can kind of see what's going on. So, you're absolutely right. He's been being double teamed for ages. And we're not certainly the first people that have been like, hey, AD's not that great of a passer out of the post. Some coaches noticed this and wanted to address it. I just can't think of a logical reason why he couldn't get better at it, because it's not that complicated, you know?
No, I think some of it is an approach problem with the type of passes he's attempted coming out of those double teams. Like, it takes some, and I'm not calling him immature, but it takes some maturation. It takes a bit of a higher understanding of the game to say, you know what? Yes, I'm being double teamed, but I might not be responsible for the assist. And then making the pass that leads to the assist out of the double team. Like, that to me is what I look for with bigs who pass out of double teams. Like, Jokic is the absolute best at it, right? Mm-hmm. He's just he's incredible at you can't even double team him. If you double
team him, to the point where it's a bad idea. Exactly.
Yeah, and what I really enjoy watching here with Jokic is when he makes those passes, it's not always, sometimes it is the assist, but more often than not, it's the pass to the wing that leads to the pass down to the corner. And in a wide open corner three pointer, right, or whatever it might be, and I think that's just in terms of the general approach that Davis takes. I think he's attempting, much like he attempts too tough of shots. Like, I think he's so used to being so much longer, so much taller, bigger, and more athletic than people that he thinks he can create an angle for a tougher pass than most. But passing isn't quite the same as shooting,
right?
And I think that leads to, you know, those tougher passes, instead of hitting somebody in the chest, they are hitting a fan in the chest in the fourth row.
Or even if it's not a turnover, it's like not in the shot pocket, but it's like a foot and a half to the left, and you still catch it, but you still got to adjust. There goes the advantage, right? Like, they close out, and now you're not as open as you once were. There's a lot of balance stuff too. A lot of it comes with just like AD being able to face the bat. Like, there's fundamental issues that make his passes inaccurate in terms of like where his feet are and where they're facing. Like, it's hard to have your feet pointing east and trying to make a pass north. You know, like those are going to be inaccurate more often than not, just like a football quarterback or something like that. So, yeah, like, I just don't see why he can't. And maybe that's just me being overly optimistic.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like when you see a really good athlete and they aren't good on defense, and you're like, why can't you be good on defense? Remember when Clarkson came into the league, he was this good athlete, he had length and stuff, and I said, hey, he might be able to be an okay defender one day, and then it's just, no. It's just not going to happen. I think passing is a little bit more straightforward in this case than just general defense, but still.
Sure.
I do want to, before we move on here, did you see any, I want to finish the point here on the structural issues that the Lakers have. Again, Rondo goes without saying at this point, AD's issues also. But I also thought, like, it didn't necessarily shock me. And while I was doing the live stream while the game was going on for Patreon, this kind of hit me as well, that like, okay, so they brought in Rondo, they brought in Bradley, and that was the best case scenario of Bradley last night.
Absolutely.
But they brought in Rondo, they brought in Bradley, and I said, okay, this seems like one of those situations where the momentum could turn. It didn't. The Lakers wound up finishing out the quarter fine, and even the half fine. But I wasn't necessarily shocked to see that the lineup that really seemed to struggle out there the most was the Rondo, Bradley, Davis one.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to have two guys who are not shooters. And yeah. I know that Rondo's shooting 38.7% from three, but it's you know, a matter of him making wide open shots because teams don't guard him, right? Yeah. And so teams are just giving him some cursory closeouts, and his three-point percentage is dropping like a rock as a result. Like, that type of thing makes me a little concerned about Vogel, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. But it's also, you know, Caruso was out. And
yeah, that didn't help.
I do understand that. I would like to see Lakers going to Quinn Cook rather than Troy Daniels if they're in these situations. Yeah. But I'd really like them to go to Darren Collison in those situations whenever possible.
Well done. Well done. Let's take a quick second. We'll come back and talk about Collison. Look at you going to...
You like my segue there?
That was nice, dude. That was well done.
It only took me like a year and a half to learn how to do stuff like that. Not be an inconsiderate dickhead that never throw, like, cause you lob it up for me all the time. And I'm like, yeah, I rarely do the same back to you. So
I'm sorry. Really, really good. That sounded really good. Now we spent an entire minute talking about it.
That's right. Which totally killed the vibe, right? Whenever you start referencing your media techniques, people love that.
Yep. All right. So to update, there is no real update since yesterday. Now, I spent a good amount of time talking about Darren Collison in the Woj report. Just to refresh everybody on that, Collison is apparently sick of spending time with his family and pursuing religion.
Stop it. Stop it.
I can't help but chuckle at stuff like that. Like, Urban Meyer always does that. He always does the, like... And Andy Pettit did it a lot, too, when he was pitching for the Yankees, where it was, you know, I just want to retire here and focus more on family. And then the right job opens up, and you're like, man, my family sucks. Uh-huh. I can't help but laugh at that. I was laughing again on the Patreon live stream. I said, Jen, like, how would you handle me saying I wanted to spend more time with family and retire? And she said, you would be right back at your job in 6 months because I couldn't stand you around the house that much. But I do want to, though, with Collison, again, I think one detail that wasn't, I think, picked up on as much as it should have been is that Collison isn't looking to return till the deadline, February 6th. That struck me as a little odd, frankly. That was kind of weird. The two advantages, again, to kind of refresh on yesterday's conversation, is that Collison will have a role with the Lakers that he won't have with the Clippers, and the Lakers can offer him more money. Mm-hmm. So it seems like the fit's pretty natural here.
Did you see what Matt Barnes said on The Jump today about it?
Yeah, he said he kind of alluded to Collison not really getting along with Doc.
Mm-hmm.
It was
about as diplomatic as Matt Barnes can be. But yes, that was the essence of it. Was like, I don't know if he's going to sign there because of, I don't know if he's got that relationship with Doc. So that factors in too.
Yeah, that definitely does. And we know that he has a relationship with Vogel. Let's say the Lakers do land Collison, right? Let's just start by defining which problems that solves, because there are a lot of them.
Yeah. I think so. I don't want to make Darren Collison out to be some savior in terms of caliber of player he is. Like, I view him as like a KCP level guy. He might be a little better than KCP. Their skill sets are different, but I just mean that like caliber of player, right? And the thing that I really like about Collison is he doesn't have much in the way of weaknesses that are really easy to exploit. Like, there are some things he's better at than others, and he's like an okay shot creator. He's an okay shooter. He shoots a very high percentage, but he also passes some up. It's not as bad as Rondo by any means, but he will dependably hit open shots and pass up some kind of open shots. I can live with that. He's a good but not great defender anymore. That was kind of his calling card coming into the league. He is a little on the small side. One bit of context with Vogel, it's easy to be like, oh, he doesn't want to sign with the Clippers because this isn't that. Collison actually demanded a trade from Indiana after playing under Vogel because they picked up George Hill. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if that's a, you know, a problem with Vogel or a problem with the roster or whatever, but that was a move that, you know, Collison wanted opportunity. So is there bad blood with Vogel? I don't know. But every one of our, like, look at, so Rondo as a shooter and as a defender and as a scorer is deficient. Those things will be picked on in a series. Caruso's inability to be an on-ball player at the NBA level thus far is a liability. Mm-hmm. In a playoff series, Avery Bradley's catch and shoot ability is a liability in a playoff series. Collison would represent the only lead guard that we have on the roster that does not have a hole that's big enough. Yeah, that's like, oh, Darren Collison's on the court. Well, we're shading off of him, or right. We're doing this. We're making him score on us. Like, no, he's good enough mm-hmm. at just about everything. And he's like B's and C's across the board. And honestly, man, that's exactly the type of guy that we need. I'd love to have some stud, but he was about to make $10 million. We're talking about getting him for like 1.75.
Yeah, the thing here that needs to be said is when you have LeBron on your team, you don't need like the ideal point guard. You need the guy like you're talking about, the guy that we're describing here, who is who has a high basement or a high floor, right? When Rondo isn't playing very well, his floor is like below, like three stories below most basements, right?
Right.
Caruso, when he isn't, when in that Milwaukee game, he looked lost out there. He looked like the moment was way too big for him. And that in that basement was three stories below most basements. I don't think, like, there won't be a moment here where you feel that way about Collison.
That's right. No, he's a solid dude all around. And yeah, like Caruso is supposed to be the you know, defensive guard off of the bench. It's good in transition, cuts well, sets good screens, all that. But you're not really describing a lead guard in that situation, right? And that's where the big hole in this team is. Now, guys like Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose are names that have been brought up. Goran Dragic mm-hmm. is another, although that's not happening. But they would be better in the non-LeBron minutes than in terms of creating shots for everybody. But Collison is solid at that, and he has the capability of playing alongside LeBron in ways that I think would be very valuable.
Do you think now, how do you think the rotation works out here? Because this was the thing that I got kind of hung up on yesterday. Now, I don't think it's so complicated that you don't add Collison. I think that was, you know, I saw Darius kind of making that point on Twitter, and I didn't feel like responding just because it's Twitter. But I don't think it's so complicated that you don't add Collison, and I think just in general, not making a move because it might upset an already mediocre, if not below mediocre, albeit crowded guard rotation.
Yeah, no, you gotta. I was talking to Darius about this today, actually, of like, you've got to respect the game of basketball to a certain level. Like, I get Rondo's done a lot in this league, man. And as much as we kill him, we need to acknowledge, like, he was the best player in playoff series. He has been that in his career, and he's built a certain stature and reputation. He also, by all accounts from the people I've spoken with around the team, very highly respected locker room guy. Mm-hmm. And it's not just based on what he's done in the past, but it's how he engages the rest of the team in the locker room, right? It's just, you've got to respect on the court too. Like, it's great that buys him a certain amount of benefit of the doubt, but basketball is basketball, man. And you are playing against the game as much, if not more, than you're playing against
one of our last meritocracies.
Sure. Right. And that, like, he's dipped below a certain point where, like, all that stuff's great, but that means he's a third string. Like, that's the best version of this, right? Is that Rondo accepts it and doesn't get kicked off the team or anything, but he's the third string point guard, right? Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, the guy who's able to call out the other team sets, the plays that they're running, able to use his brain in the way that everybody respects, in a way that matters on this team. But he's not playing 18, 20, 22 minutes in a game. And like, you do need to approach it with some degree of delicacy. I think that that's like, you have to be diplomatic about how you do this, but I just don't think there has, like, the basketball has to come in to play. And I would argue you have to put it first. We are not good enough to cut corners.
This is the big thing.
And we don't have that margin for error. We need dudes who can hoop. And it's not like Darren Collison is some like 22-year-old kid that doesn't know how to play, who hasn't played in deep in playoff series and things like that, you know? So I mean, we're preaching to the choir here, at least to each other, but I don't think it's that hard of a sell to the rest of the team either.
Yeah, I agree. I would probably start him. Like, it would probably take some time. You'd have to work him into things and stuff like that. But I think starting him probably makes the most sense, because that allows LeBron to be the first sub out, you know, or to sub a little earlier, and then you can stagger LeBron and AD a little bit more naturally. But I don't think the math on this is all that complicated. And frankly, like, I think if you're talking about overcomplicated math here, it's kind of overthinking it. Like, it's just you add the better, he would immediately become, would you agree with this? He would immediately become the best point guard on the team.
Oh, it's not close.
Yeah.
It's not even close.
Then that's it. That's the end of the conversation. if you add somebody who immediately, as they walk into the gym, becomes the best at his position, then that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I do want to really quickly. So I had some comments as a result of some of, I guess I didn't go deep enough into Collison's legal problems. And here's I had somebody specifically ask me what the difference here is between Collison's and Rose's and Kidd's and whatever.
I must be under a rock. I don't know what Collison's legal problems are.
So in 2016, he pled guilty to domestic battery.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I am very curious to hear your views on this then.
So I think there's a couple things here that are differentiating factors. In the other cases, I didn't sense as much remorse as we got from Collison as it was happening, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Rose's defense of alleged rape was gross. Like, it was, if you go back through the court documents and stuff like that, it was not a very sturdy defense. And it makes you walk away from it saying, like, okay, yeah, that's not great. Collison, you know, so he pled guilty. He served his 20 days in jail. He served 20 hours of community service. He's been in informal probation for 3 years and went through a year-long domestic training program to hopefully ensure that doesn't happen again. As we talked about previously, the reason he's available right now is because he retired to focus more on religion and spend time around family. Now, you know, I poke fun at it because that's just the kind of thing that it makes me chuckle every so often. But the difference here to me feels like a different tone of remorse for the stuff that he did at the time. The other thing here too, and I don't want to sound calloused, and this is going to sound calloused, and I'm trying not to make it such, but the thing that annoyed me, one of the most annoying aspects of the relationship the Lakers have had with Lance Stephenson, with Jason Kidd, and there's a third one here that I'm blanking on, but the fact that, like, Lance Stephenson isn't somebody who's going to help your team win. Jason Kidd isn't. Now, by all accounts, he has been a positive impact in the locker room, and he has helped. But at the time, I walked away from that. I was like, Jason Kidd doesn't seem like somebody who you needed to prioritize in the way that the Lakers prioritize, and that's before you get to his legal problems. Collison here, like, at the very least, if you're just talking about purely practical, how can I help the Lakers win, like, Collison can actually do that. So you combine those factors there, the difference in remorse and the fact that Collison can actually help. And I think that's kind of the difference to me. And I'm not going to tell people how to feel about this stuff. This shit's really complicated. But that's just, for me personally, that's where I'm coming from on this.
Hmm. So if the guy's good enough,
I mean, that's sports, dude.
Well, that's the thing. That's why these topics, I don't, This is a like off podcast, off Twitter conversation for me, because it gets into real places that people don't like to get into, quite frankly. But like whenever in any industry, when you're dealing at the best in the world at something, make no mistake, everybody who's in the NBA is like the best in the world at playing basketball all the way down. So if you're talking about a starting caliber player, Darren Collison's what, the like probably the 150th best basketball player in the whole freaking world.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with people who are the best in the world in their industry, a lot of times you're dealing with psychopaths or sociopaths or people who are not well adjusted because they have put so much of their time and effort into that one thing. It's also like, I mean, is it moral to listen to a Michael Jackson song and enjoy it?
I feel about it.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But there are all sorts of things, man. And we've talked about this before. We're a fan base that idolizes Kobe Bryant. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of this that comes with that. And there's a conversation about that too. Right. So, I don't necessarily feel good about myself for that. Yeah. Right. I would love to be a holy moral person.
Fuck
everything and anything. But like you said, man, it's sports. Like we're simply talking in no more, at least in my case, about whether or not you can perform on the court.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's the easiest way to go about it. It's the way to avoid. And I'm not saying you are avoiding.
Oh, no. I am avoiding it. Absolutely.
Well, okay.
Because this type of thing that can, like, if I I could tear down my entire, like, oh, I'm not watching this at all.
Yeah.
I'm not participating in this at all. You could also do that for pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of your heroes are freaks. They are, like, objectively bad people. A lot of the people that we have, like, held up as heroes in our society are that. And in any society, that's replete throughout history. So what do you do with that? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I guess for me, as I'm somebody, and frankly, like, I appreciate the people who called me out on this, because I have gone hard on the Jason Kidds and on the Lance Stevensons. And I swear to God, there's a third one there that is really annoying me. I think it is Derrick Rose. We brought him up previously, but there was one previous before him even. I appreciate that people are keeping me honest here and forcing me to, because once you do kind of open, I don't want to call it Pandora's box, because these crimes have victims, and I don't want to make it seem as if these victims' existence is in some way, shape, or form a distraction for me. That's not it. That's the wrong way to go about this. But once I do start down the path of, well, this guy kind of makes me feel gross, and then that guy makes me feel gross, and that guy makes me feel really gross. And once I open up about those guys, yeah, I have to be consistent, and I have to talk about this guy's past, especially seeing as it's a literal conviction. He pled guilty to it. It definitely happened. So, yeah, I appreciate the people keeping me honest on it. All I can do is try to be honest in my response to it. And if I didn't suffice, then that's completely your call. I'm not going to tell people how to feel one way or the other on any of this. All right, let's segue awkwardly over to, you wanted to say a few things. I thought it was pointed today. No?
Oh, no. I do. I don't have much to say. I just wanted to acknowledge David Stern. That's all.
Yeah. So, well, I thought it was kind of fitting that it kind of worked out the way it did today, that NBA All-Stars were announced. The voting so far has been announced. And the two people at the top of it are Luka Doncic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, both players who you could make the argument would not exist if not for David Stern's impact on the game of basketball. As the English major, somebody who reads between the lines the way that I do, as anally as I do, that stood out to me as a really cool moment.
No, and Giannis had some really thoughtful words about Stern's passing that I thought were poignant. The international game and the growth of the NBA, and I think something like 20-25% of the league is non-US born at this point. And like it's difficult to understate, you know, the 1988 Olympics were the Olympics before NBA players were involved, and David Robinson was on that team, and US lost, if I remember correctly, it was in kind of shady circumstances. But anyway.
Was that the Doug Collins team?
Doug Collins was 72.
Okay, so never mind.
There was something else, but there was some referee nonsense going on in 88. But anyway, Stern's vision and, you know, taking the game from a game that was NBA Finals games were tape delayed.
Yeah.
And his understanding of how to market the sport and how to focus on it was the first league that really focused on marketing its stars, even ahead of its teams. Mm-hmm. And so it would be Magic versus Bird, mm-hmm. just as much as it was Lakers versus Celtics. That hadn't really been done before. And there was always this, like, you know, team before player, you know, mentality in terms of how sports were put forth, that, like, it has its place for certain, but so do the individuals, and the individuals matter too. And I think Stern, you know, we have a complicated relationship with him as Laker fans with basketball reasons, which was total BS even to this day. And if it happened to any other team, it would be like the biggest scandal in basketball history, right? Where an owner shot down a perfectly legit trade because, like, the NBA was in charge. They ran the Pelicans or the Hornets, whatever they were at the time. But they were supposed to leave the basketball decisions alone to Del Demps, and to the basketball people, right? Good old Del Demps has shown up a few times in Lakers history, hasn't he? And so, yeah, that was total BS. But he, there's no question that he was one of the great commissioners in sports history because of all that he accomplished and how much he grew the game.
I agree completely. I think we should change the name of the Larry O'Brien to the David Stern Trophy. Larry mm-hmm. O'Brien wasn't that good of a commissioner, frankly, when you go back through some of that stuff. And if we don't make it the David Stern Trophy for the championship, I would also like to see, like, a David Stern. Like, if we do the midseason tournament, but I would like to see. So David Stern's big thing was growing the game globally, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see a basketball's version of the Ryder Cup. Do you know what the Ryder Cup is?
For golf? Is that the golf one?
Yeah, where you have, like, the Team USA takes on Team World. And it's mm-hmm. this big, like, weekend-long thing where they have different formats of how players are going to go up against each other in various rounds of as the tournament goes along. It's this really cool event. It's one of my favorite sporting events of the year because I also love golf. But I would like to see, like, the David Stern Cup where you have, like, Team USA takes on Team World. And I think now the global game, if you kind of combine them, has caught up, if not maybe even passed Team U, like the American game. I would love to see that either like it's a single game, or you could do it over a weekend where you have, like, 2-on-2 games and 3-on-3 games, and then that leads up to the ultimate 5-on-5 game between the American team and Team World. I would love to see something like that and have it played in David Stern's memory. I think that'd be really cool.
No, I like it. I like it. That's exactly, you know, what the biggest thing that he did for the game is that international expansion.
Yep. If you want to read more about that, I'm probably going to put something together on my Patreon. So check that out as well. That'll do it for this episode and this week's episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Fun week so far. We have a fun weekend ahead of us with a couple games there. The Lakers, please, guys, just give us one win where we just completely annihilate a lesser opponent. That'd be nice.
Let's beat the crap out of the Pelicans.
Yes. Yeah. Perfect example. Perfect team. Awesome. Hopefully they do that this Friday, though, and we will talk to you again on Monday. Get your questions in. Again, we are fully caught up, so get your questions in for Sunday's mailbag episode, and I'll answer them. Have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.